Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is producer Tom here. Deborah is in Australia at the moment, and so I'm just jumping in to give you a few quick announcements. First of all, if you are in Australia, Deborah's tour there continues. You can see The Guilty Feminist recorded live in Perth on Monday the 20th of May, Sydney on Thursday the 23rd of May, Melbourne on Saturday 25th of May, Brisbane Monday 27th of May, and we finish in Canberra on Tuesday 28th of May. If London is closer to home, we'll be recording Guilty Feminist episodes at our regular home of King's Place on the 12th of June and the 15th of July. And we also have a special episode of Global Pillage, the comedy panel show where two teams of comedians take on the hive mind of the audience. That's hosted by Abigailia Shimon, and it's on Monday the 17th of June. And finally, if you're going to be at the Edinburgh Fringe, The Guilty Feminist will be recording three live episodes at the Gilded Balloon at the Museum on August the 12th to the 14th at 7:40 p.m. For tickets and more information about all of these, go to guiltyfeminist.com. And now, on with the podcast.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, darling.
Hello.
I'm so sorry. This is the most Carrie Bradshaw reason for being late ever. But somebody just sent me, my publicist just sent me a cover, a magazine cover that I did, and the article the interview. And I was just like, you know, when you're sort of reading it to see what they've said, because actually you might have accidentally said, oh, I hate feminists really, or something. And so I was quickly reading it and also obviously scanning the photos to see if I hated any of them and was going to die.
I just did a very unfeminist sort of, I sort of did my hair on the Zoom and then just sort of released it from the ponytail and gave it a big ruffle about and then was like, oh, it's recording, isn't it, already?
Oh, yeah.
Poor Tom will have to watch me do my hair at the beginning of this when he edits it.
He won't watch it, will he? I've done these in my pyjamas. I've been dressed up. Hey, Juno.
Hi, sorry, I'm running late. Sorry, I'm just befuddled.
I've literally just sat down. Juno and Jessica, do you know each other?
No, it's so nice to meet you.
So Jessica Foster Q, Juno Dawson. So I'll do a little...
Hello.
I'm going to do a little...
Hello.
What's your history with Sex and the City? And then we can just dive in. All right. I'm going to do opening titles. The spontaneity. Oh, God. I'm such a professional. I haven't even got one word out. Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist Watchers and, just like that, the Sex and the City Reheal with me, Deborah Frances White, and my very special guests, Jessica Foster Q and Juno Dawson. Episode 9,
no strings attached. So, hello, Jessica Foster Q.
Hello.
And hello, Juno Dawson.
Hi.
Now, regular Guilty Feminist listeners will know Jessica Foster Q and her comedy stylings immensely well. Juno Dawson, I have referenced a few times on this show because I've told everyone to listen to her brilliant podcast, So I Got to Thinking, which is a Sex and the City podcast. It's absolutely brilliant. I've guested on it. I love it. And I've been listening to Juno and her co-host and guest's analysis during this time, and I've just been dying to get her on, but she's also a brilliant novelist. So, Jess, I've got to ask you, what's your history with Sex and the City?
I think it's quite complicated or simple.
God, that's so parry of you.
I know.
So I couldn't help wondering.
I think, when was it first on? Was it the 90s?
Yeah.
98. Yeah. Right, so I will have been what I think initially this was watched for me. You're not going to like this, Deborah, but much like Friends, it was watched because it was what all my female peers were doing. And I thought, I watched it.
I'm not going to like that. What do you think I was doing? Feminism at 12? No.
Yeah. I was peer pressured into watching it, but it was never, I look back now and think there's nothing in it I was interested in.
You couldn't get a purchase on it.
I don't care. No, and like I can understand why people who like had a real passion for fashion would love it, or kind of relationship columns would love it, or romance even would love it. And then none of those things were my bag. So I don't know what I ever saw in it. But eventually, I know I begun watching it out of peer pressure, and I knew I found myself loving it and knowing everything about it and feeling a lot more invested in it than I ever was actually in Friends and, I don't know, wearing a dress and all the other things I never really, I just did, but didn't really actually want to do. And then the films came out, and by the time they came out, and I was fuming, and I hated, just 100% hatred for the films. I remember watching two of them. Were there more than two? I watched
there were
two. There were two. I watched them on planes because, you know, what else do you do on a long flight? And
your standards do go down away. On a plane as well.
They do go down.
If you've watched a film on a plane and enjoyed it, you have to remember if it was a 9 on a plane, it's a 7 on the ground. And much like the Mile High Club, your standards go down. Like you just to join the Mile High
Club. You'll blow anyone on a plane.
Yeah. I'm on a long haul, I've got nothing else to do.
Yeah. You know. Might as well suck a dick in the toilet. It's a euphemism for all sex, isn't it?
I'm a feminist, but suck a dick is a euphemism for all sex. Jessica Foster Q.
It's been a long few years.
I'm going to call your fiance and tell her you said that.
She can probably hear me shouting from here. We're recording from home. The other rule about planes, I digress, is that because you're so high up in the sky, your gravity is less, that your mass is so much less, that you can have 7 times more calories. Just a fact.
That's interesting.
Solid fact, actually. And
what's the deal with aeroplane that rule, food, Jessica?
Yeah, we expanded that rule to include airports and anything you eat in an airport. Yum, yum, yum. And then I hated the films. And so I would never, ever have watched this reboot were it not for the opportunity to do any podcast with you, and I saw that this was coming up, and I thought I would love an excuse to have it count as work to sit down, and I'm so glad that I've not done it till now, because it's meant that I've had to watch 9 episodes.
I've binged Juno and my faces. If listeners, if you could see them.
It's
a lot. And basically, it's like 9 different shows. So basically, it's almost, you could have watched 9 episodes of anything. You could have watched one of Buffy, one of Lost, one of Mad Men, and it would have probably made the same amount of sense, actually.
I could have
had an L word. I could have had a West Wing, 100%.
Did you have to take breaks? Because like truck drivers have to do it in shifts. I would have had to binge this in shifts with another woman. Like, you take two and just tell me what happened. I can't go anymore. And not that I haven't enjoyed any of it, and not that I haven't loved being back in the company of these women. I'm not being fully negative at all, but I just think nine back to back, I don't think this was made to be binged.
I didn't do it in a wanna. Life is full. I wasn't able to do it in a wanna, but I've done it over the course of 4 days. And I've loved it.
Have you?
Yeah.
Have you?
Episode one.
Maybe it's meant to be
binged. Didn't love it. Episode one, I found so hard going. You know you're in trouble when you're enjoying noticing the fact that your friend is the voiceover on the Asda adverts in between the actual bits of the show. That was more joyful for me. I found episode one so, I mean, talk about on the nose. It felt like I was just punched in the face with obviousness. Mm-hmm. The fact that it was like, and now here's the new black one. Mm-hmm. I hated how on the nose it was. I hated how exposition-y it was. But I feel like that's how a lot of pilot episodes of anything have to go down. And I don't think it's necessarily, it's definitely not the cast's fault. It's almost certainly not the actor's fault. I think producers ruin episodes ones of things because they don't trust audiences not to be... To be intelligent.
Do you mean the writer's fault? It's probably not.
I don't think it's the writer's fault. Yeah, I mean, yeah. And it's definitely not the cast's fault. I just think telly people ruin things.
Do you think maybe it's exec producers going, lots of people will not have watched Sex and the City. You've got to explain everything to all of them.
Well, and also they can't just turn up at a party. Tell them that they make them have 18 conversations that they're going to go to a party. It's like, oh God. I mean, as writers, all of us will have all been on the receiving end of that note. And it's agony. And but you can just see it in action in that first episode of this, so hard. Whereas by the stage we're at now, I am deeply in love. I'm happy to marry it again.
Wow. Are you? Yeah. Okay, interesting. I think maybe I should have binged it. It's gone up and down for me. I've been, you know how Carrie was always just deeply in love with Big? But with Aiden, she was like, oh, I don't know. I should love him. But the original Sex and the City was my Big.
Right.
And Just Like That is very much.
You're Aiden.
You know, even, I want to say not even Aiden. Do you remember that fuck
Burger.
Buddy?
Burger.
Yeah, it's more Burger. I'm reducing it to, you remember that fuck buddy? The one that... she tried to take out for dinner because they had such great sex.
Oh, the Sucky To Me guy. Dennis from 30 Rock.
Yeah. Some episodes are my fuck buddy. Some episodes are my Burger. Okay. I mean, occasionally I might get an Aiden episode, but honestly, and I was really much more positive the last couple of weeks. The last 2 weeks I was really positive, and this week it made me sad. I got depressed watching this episode. Oh. Juno, what's your history with Sex and the City?
So weirdly, I was in my last year of sixth form when it started, and I remember my first memory was the billboard, which was prominently on my way to school, and they were so airbrushed, I recognised neither Kim Cattrall nor Sarah Jessica Parker. Like, that the original cast picture, and I knew, I was very familiar with both of their works. I was a huge Mannequin fan as a kid, and I knew Sarah Jessica Parker from Mars Attacks and things. But they just didn't look like them. And at the time, like a lot of people in the late 90s, I was very into Ally McBeal. Like,
yes,
properly obsessed. And that is a show that has not aged well at all. And
even
so
at the
when I first really was, yeah, it was, I mean,
I, loved
I, mean,
it.
I was
loved it.
Yeah,
to it,
I was 17. I don't know. The idea of a woman, she's a lawyer with really short skirts. Wow. Yeah. But I remember the first series of Sex and the City, I found it a bit too hard. And that was because I had not, at that point, had an adult relationship, you know. So it was a bit beyond me. And then with season two and three, I was at university and we loved it. And everybody in my student house, we used to not go out that night and we would watch Sex and the City. And by the time it finished, I was living in Brighton and very much living my Carrie Bradshaw life, living in this kind of crappy bedsit, and I was doing my teacher training and I wanted to be Carrie, you know. I wanted to be a writer and I wanted to live in the city and I wanted to find inconvenient love, as she tells Alessandra Petrovsky, and that was, you know, I loved it. And I'm even an apologist for the first film. I mean, the second film I would like stricken from the record, but I would,
it's
even
not canon, is it?
It's not canon. All I can think is that they were being held hostage or something. I don't know.
By millions of dollars.
By millions of dollars. Well, they were, quite.
And presumably at the Dubai Tourist Board or something.
Yeah, which was filmed in Morocco in the end. Fact fans. Oh. They weren't allowed to film in Dubai or Abu Dhabi because the script was too sexy. So they had to film in the liberal capital that is Morocco.
Too sexy or too offensive?
You can't get your arms out, but you can film Sex in the City too.
Again, if you paid as much as Sex and City 2 paid to get your arms out, I reckon they'd be down with it.
When they announced, so there were rumblings about 3 years ago that they were going to reboot Sex and the City to be about women in their 50s. And I was kind of like, but the original cast are now in their 50s. And so I did start to think, hang on a minute, is this like coded HBO phrase for we're bringing back Sex and the City? And then when it was announced, I was kind of like, huh, because obviously Nurse Samantha. And so I was like, it's not going to be the same, is it? But then as the set reports started creeping out, I was captivated and I was really intrigued to see where they were going to go with it. Like Jessica, I thought episode one was poo. But then I think, like you, Deborah, I've gone really up and down with it. Some weeks I've really enjoyed it. The hey, it's Che Diaz, has just become part of my daily vocabulary now. Kind of like you get knocked down by a train. Hey, it's Che Diaz. You're in a sandwich shop. Hey, it's Che Diaz. I'll have the Che Diaz. But yeah, it's difficult. I've got to be really careful. I am working. I'm also a scriptwriter and I have shows in development with HBO. So I too am being held hostage. But I think what I keep coming back to is every Thursday morning, I have dived out of bed, made my cup of tea, gone to the lounge and watched Sex and the City while eating my breakfast. And if I wasn't enjoying it, I wouldn't be so keen to jump out of bed. So whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
Here we are talking about it. And I can't think of any other show where I would want to talk about it on podcasts. So they're doing something right, I guess.
I think you're exactly right. Because although I'm not 100% satisfied and in my feedback card is not 5 stars across the board, I am still coming back for more every week.
Yeah.
And not just because I'm doing this as a sort of, you know, guilty feminist fun kind of extra ep each week. I would definitely watch it anyway and be intrigued and gripped. And I think that says something about the strong relationship they built with us originally and our affection for these characters and our need to know what happens to them. So let's get into this week's episode. I am going to do a quick recap, the shortest recap I've done since this began. In this week's episode, Carrie struggles with whether she should take off her wedding ring. Charlotte struggles to teach her daughter to use a tampon. Miranda struggles to know how to be in a relationship with Che Diaz. And they all paint a women's shelter. That's what happens in this week's And Just Like That.
When you put it like that, you realise how
yes.
Like, I don't, you know when a plot is rich, whatever the opposite of that, this is.
Poor? Yeah. No, I should not say, look, struggles. Listen, I know how hard it is to write anything.
45 minutes and someone's A plot is, shall I or should I not take up a ring?
I know. Yeah. And obviously it represents more than that. However, that is what happened. Like, we cannot get around
that's
that
the plot.
Fact.
That is the plot.
And it's very hard to write anything. So I put that out there first. Hard to write anything, hard to get anything made, hard to do anything well. And as you say, millions of producers going more. So let's take our pressure off. You know, we understand all of that. And thank you very much for making this and all things, people who make TV. We know how hard it is. But let's get in there because I feel they do want us to take it seriously and analyse it and not just, you know, watch it and keep walking. And I feel that they knew when they rebooted this that fans would have strong feelings. You can't make something good and then not have fans have strong feelings. So let's give ourselves permission to go there. Can I ask you, what did you think of this wedding ring storyline? Let's look at it in these chunks. So first of all, Carrie, somebody admires her wedding ring, the jeweler from downstairs, which is a sort of parallel Carrie. This is a woman has moved in downstairs
who is herself at 35. So she has a shadow Carrie living downstairs, curly hair, creative, men coming and going, wears see-through tops and sometimes just comes into the hallway in bras. Very much Carrie Bradshaw, as we once knew her. We heard she's a jewellery designer many times, and yet she comes upstairs and says, I'm a jewellery designer. Okay.
Sometimes I do that, to be fair. Like, I'm at literary events and I'm like, hi, I'm Juno Dawson. Like, people haven't, like, I'm literally, it's the Juno Dawson benefit for Juno Dawson. And I'm like, hi, I need you to know how down to earth I am. I'm Juno Dawson, I'm a writer.
Stood
next to a wall of my book, kind of.
That's true. We do place ourselves sometimes. But I don't, it's a little strange to your name.
There's
but
so
no, okay.
much of that.
It is true. That is true. Go,
like, they're really like punching it home in this. Like Miranda's drinking was like,
God, I can't. How many secret tricks did
she get it? She's yeah, like, when it got to the finding the miniatures in the bag, I was like, guys, we had already got it.
Crack on. She literally had a straw in a bag once.
Just walking around with an IV drip full of whiskey.
Seen that like gif of Betty White and somebody else, and they're doing cheers with enormous wine glasses like this? It was a little bit like that.
Yes,
it was almost a parody.
Exactly.
Jeweler downstairs says, oh, could you put this ring on your Instagram for me? By the way, that's a pretty ring on her finger, which it isn't. It's just a band. Yeah. So it's a strange thing to compliment. It's clearly on her wedding finger. It's a wedding band. What is that plain band on your left hand, which is so pretty? Oh, it's my wedding ring. And then I'm going on a date. Maybe I should take it off. How did you feel about this whole plot line?
Oh, Carrie. Just wear it on a necklace like you did with Aidan's engagement ring.
Yeah.
If only there was a middle way for you to keep Mr. Big close to your heart the way you did with Aidan.
When you were engaged to him and he was very much alive. Thank
You're
you.
Brutal. Harsh.
Imagine how awful it must be for Aidan watching this. Just sitting there going, for fuck's sake, I was a live man in your house polishing your floors, buying you computers, and you couldn't be bothered to put my ring on your finger. Wow. What did you think of this whole plot line, Jess?
I did. I think it was like wafer thin. I mean, I understand in an ensemble piece that every character needs something going on with them. And I do think it's plausible that somebody who's lost their husband is going to be like, I don't want to take this ring off. But like you say, the in to it was claggy. It was just like, don't slap me. Touch my face, but don't slap me. I don't get it. She puts his ring on and then keeps it on with a plaster. And then it gets stuck in a U-bend so she gets to have an excuse so that Miranda's poor freshly divorced husband gets more than one line or one little geeky background look. Steve. Poor Steve. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad Steve's getting a couple of scenes. I hope he gets paid a bit more for this episode because Steve's...
We haven't seen Steve yet with that ice cream in his mouth. So that was
the first time Steve's not had something in his mouth and he gets to have a whole conversation while all of them paint that house way too slowly, really carefully and slowly. That's not how anyone paints any house. Heels.
I was delighted she wore her silver sandals. That was like a touch of the old Harry. She's still alive. She may be very, very, very elderly, as apparently people are when they're 55, constantly having hip operations and referring to their own age. That's just not what I see or know. She's 10 years older than Samantha was in the series. Samantha was 40 fucking five. Remember that? She said that at lunch. I'm 40 fucking five. Samantha was the most glamorous of them all, the most sexy of them all. They're 10 years older than that. They look amazing. They're dressed stunningly. Why are they called ma'am and they have no sense of their own sexual selves anymore? I find this very, very strange. But yeah, I do buy this.
I buy the ring, taking the wedding ring off dilemma. I mean, that's totally plausible. But to take that and go to, we need a whole plot out of this. They've just sort of coloured it in by numbers.
I know it's meant to represent her feelings about going to the state. I buy it, but... 2 weeks ago, she went on a date. We're finally there. Oh, she's going on a date. Okay, time has passed.
nobody, listen, and I'm not saying we don't need, of course we need representation on television of what it is to be widowed, and of course we need all that, and that may be amazing, amazing content storyline for some people. But overall, we have not tuned back into Sex and the City to watch someone grieve for a whole season. And I get, I wish they'd started with Big died 2 years ago. You can even flash back to if you want. 2 years have passed, she's ready to start dating. Because I have tuned in to see women in their 50s getting it on. And I'm like, I stuck with it. I stuck with it. I waited. She finally went on a date. What was that?
We are getting a little bit of that.
Just a bit with Che Diaz. Don't forget Che Diaz, the sexiest human in the world.
Okay, but Carrie finally went on a date. Then I was like, great, she's going to go on another date, which was promised. Mm-hmm. Last week, nothing. No reference to this guy. She's not dating anymore. This week, she's going back on the date. And she, when she turns up on that date and goes, I can't do it. I was like, oh, I'm so sad.
Can you imagine?
I'm like,
that's almost worse than being stood up. Imagine getting showered. Yeah, it's so weird.
It's exactly what mobile phones are for. I mean, I know they're in their 50s, but I think they know how to do a WhatsApp.
Yeah. Well, she said, I didn't want to text
you. And she
gets
really dressed up to do it as well. Yeah. Like, she got really dolled up to stand him up. So weird.
And then he loved it, didn't he? I mean, that was weird. Best rejection ever.
I understand not texting someone because you think, oh, they are going to feel blown off. But FaceTiming them or saying, look, let's have a platonic coffee or something like that. I'd love to see you and talk about how sad I feel because you're a too.
There's so many types of coffee you can get now that's a plausible type of coffee as well, isn't it? I have a platonic coffee, please.
With oat milk. I understand that, but I just felt like she goes all that way. She sees him. He gets it. He's also a widower. I don't understand why they couldn't have had a dinner where she's gone, I'm going to talk to you as a friend. It was so strange to me. But I was like, mainly what I feel is the writers, I understand this may happen and I just don't want to watch it in real time. Can't we just cut to the point? But Carrie's happy to go dating again. It's making me so sad now that she turns up and we don't get a date again. I'm like, for fuck's sake. And then I thought at the end of that little scene, he was going to say, should we just get a drink? Like friends. Yeah. And then they were going to stumble out of another bar super drunk. And I was going to be, this is the funny thing. She's trying not to go on a date, but she ends up going on it. Do you know what I mean? Something. I feel like I'd be
making
promised
a lovely friend. And maybe there's a lovely friend where there is a bit of chemistry and then the audience can start feeling a bit like, maybe we want them to get together, but they won't. And that can be a heartbreaky thing.
Yes.
Yeah, they've nipped it in the bud too soon. And if they're going to keep bringing him back, that's going to get on my tits, actually.
Third strike. Now she's texted him a fucking again and going through. I can't watch this again.
Yeah.
What if then he turns up and I don't trust them? I don't trust them to have him not turn up going, I've brought a replica of my dead wife. I
feel you on this frustration with her, but also I don't know. I definitely have had to have a word with myself about the prism through which I'm watching this. I've been so filled with joy at Miranda's big queer awakening because I imagine of all my own baggage I've come to this series with. But it's got to the point where, not this episode actually, but like maybe two episodes around episode seven, where they really were, was it just me? And I absolutely am ready to be corrected on this. It really felt like it was potentially going to turn out that they're all gay now.
Oh. Charlotte fancies Che as well. It's just Che is irresistible.
Like, I mean, Che is irresistible. I thought Charlotte fancied Che.
Yeah, they defy any limits of sex because they're just a powerful creature.
Professor Nia, I thought Professor Nia, she's going to leave. She keeps kissing that boyfriend very passionately, but I'm pretty sure she's in love with Miranda.
A lot of them now as well. Just leave him. He wants a baby, you don't. Leave him.
Yeah.
Done.
Go.
Boring.
And if you want to get with Miranda, now it turns out she's probably going to have to be not non-monogamous. That's fine.
Is that going to go?
I would like to see it. Also, I thought that Carrie's new best friend, the real estate lady, who's that brilliant actor, I can't remember.
Lovely Seema. Seema.
Yeah, and then, but then that man turned up at the end of this episode and I was like, no, stop. I want that all to be a foil that she's going to find her man at 54. I want her to actually be in love with Carrie and Carrie go, wow, probably worth a bounce.
Oh, so that's a great pitch for the writer's room. Can we send that in? That would be so funny. If opening of season
and
two.
Just like that, they were all like queer.
We're all queer. And they're all in same-sex or non-binary relationships.
Yeah.
Do it. My issue with the man, whose name I have forgotten, so that's
great
how much
hair.
Of a...
Peter. Great head of hair.
Pete, is Peter. Or Peter? I was going to say, I couldn't remember his name. So my issue with Peter is when you... So obviously this comes from the rather more forensic viewing that we've had to do, so I got to thinking. When you consider his scenes, in the first one, they meet and immediately just puke, so we didn't see the first day. Then he followed her around a bit at that benefit and asks her for another date, and she says yes. And then this week, when he turns up for his date, she calls it off. So we've learned nothing about him. Are we meant to care whether or not she goes on this date? It's almost he just feels very symbolic. Like, we know he's a teacher, and that's it. And he has a dead wife. Did he kill his wife? I mean, I don't know. It's kind of... I've been reading a lot of murder novels recently. They would suggest he definitely murdered his wife. But I just don't care. And I think one of the things that keeps coming up is that even though it's, what, a 40-minute sitcom and the plot really is as far as should I take off my wedding ring, there's just too much going on with all these new characters. So, you know, this week we had the three main cast, plus Che, plus Steve, plus Harry, Anthony, Naya, Nia, LTW, Seema, oh, and Peter, don't forget the ghost of Big. Then, oh, don't forget Lily's tampon. Rock is still transitioning in the background. And before you know, Andre wants a baby. LTW has seven kids. And before you know it, it's
so true.
No one character feels wildly interesting, except maybe Miranda, who has really, really done a lot this season. Yeah. She's had alcoholism. She decided not to be an alcoholic. You know, there's so much going on for Miranda.
Smoothly.
But she's finding
her new
like...
queer self. She's a totally different personality as well. She shifted her personality from being the kind of prickly, uptight one who takes no shit to somebody who cannot stop apologising, trips over her own apologies, and is very frightened of anybody who is in any way has a marginalised identity, because she has to sort of say, on a date with somebody who you're in a thing with, if they say you look especially pretty tonight, surely by that point you know how to say, oh, you're looking hot yourself, and not say, I know it's a joke, but it's like, I don't know. Juno, can I ask you, and I'm sorry to ask you about trans representation, but I'm going to.
Please do.
Fire
away.
What can I ask you? Do you think of the trans representation on this show? How do you think they're doing on that?
So my fear is sometimes the best of intentions can lead you astray. And this sounds awful, but it feels like they're just trying too hard. And that could be applied to everything, including the conversations around race with Naya and LTW, the conversation around menopause, the conversation around periods. It's like, it's all a bit too much. It all feels a bit like, and again, plot is being sacrificed for them to sort of, it almost slightly feels like they're making amends for the poor representation in the original series. And so they're giving up a lot of conversation to the things which are just the facts of the facts. And, you know, if you look at a show, like, it's interesting, Emily in Paris, for example, which is the other Darren Star creation that's floating around at the moment, there is a very diverse cast, but nobody's talking about it. It's enough for Emily to have a mixed race boyfriend for us to see that mixed race people have jobs, they have lives, they can be working class, they can be upper middle class. You know, we don't need, sometimes you can be seen and not necessarily heard in order to convey what's happening. And, you know, we understand that Rock is trans. We understand that Che is non-binary. Cool. And now let's see them sort of live their lives. So it's welcome. But I was glad. It's strange, actually. This week, and this is odd, I was really pleased this week to see Steve get it wrong. Because it's all been very smooth sailing for, you know, nobody... has questioned Che's identity. Nobody has really questioned Miranda's attraction to a non-binary person, what that means for their sexuality, if anything. So it was actually really refreshing to see Steve misgender Che and kind of admit to being confused about what it means to be non-binary and what it means for Miranda, because in real life, actually, people do get it wrong. So while I have no doubt everybody involved with And Just Like That had the absolute best of intentions, and I think we could say this about the recent reboot of The L Word as well, which seemingly bent over backwards to make a display of how contemporary it was. But sometimes you've got to keep and this is, you know, I should write this somewhere on my wall as well. You know, you're meant to be telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that has been a bit sacrificed, I think.
Yeah, to have big it's time. Yeah, a contemporary
conversation. It's funny, isn't it? With, I mean, I 100% hear all that and I couldn't agree more. And I hadn't even thought about it in terms of sacrifice of story. It's so overwhelming how much story has been sacrificed, but it doesn't it feel like that's the whole vibe of this show as well, is like go big or go home, go obvious or go home, stylistically in every sense. I feel like they're acting even more than in the 90s when it was all we were used to, but we're in this, it jars now when almost everything else you see is so naturalistic and so beautifully acted, and you've seen those actors act beautifully in other things, be directed in this or have the, be in something in the style of which of this is, whereas they might as well even all be going around with a massive neon like headdress that says, I'm acting now. Like the acting is so like, and here it's a punchline. They barely, any of them can deliver a line apart from Sarah or Sara Rodriguez and one or two others can deliver any funny line without almost literally sort of throwing their arms wide after doing it. It's like, fucking chill out. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I think that was the original style of the show.
Yeah,
I think.
And they've decided to keep that, but it's like, well, you've dragged everything else into 2022. You could have a little, there's room for surely a bit of modernization on that as well.
I think the reason there was a sort of dialed up feeling in terms of the acting, I think it was the original series was acted very well, but there was that sort of slightly stylized feeling, was because like everything was so themed. So if one of them was, you know, had braces, the whole, you know, and the whole theme was school, the other one, you know, they were eating in the cool cafeteria and they were, you know, sitting by the pool and it was all this sort of school stuff or going to the prom. So it deserved a little bit of, you know we're in a heightened reality.
Mm. They have eaten some amazing food in this series.
Yes.
I've really noticed that. I've been really jealous of some of the seafood and stuff.
Because it used to be they would only ever order egg white omelettes and fruit plates.
Yeah, exactly. And that they've done quietly. And I hadn't even thought about that. The one thing they've quietly done is that they all eat now. And they don't talk about their diets. And that, well done. Hats off. One thing to do a big about. They've done it quietly. They haven't gone on about it.
Absolutely, because one time I remember Samantha at brunch ordering hot water and lemon because there were no organic vegetables. And then they all said, but you look so amazing. And I was like, that's not a great sign. She's come for brunch and she's having hot water and lemon. I mean, that's that's not okay, guys. You have an intervention when Miranda has more than one glass of wine, but not when Samantha is drinking hot water and lemon at brunch. But I would say to you, Juno, just brace yourself for the 2042 Emily in Paris reboot. Don't relax by into that show. Do not relax into that show.
She can speak French by then. She can string a sentence together. A better example would be Euphoria. At the cast of Euphoria.
Incredible.
Where you've got Hunter Schafer as a trans character. She's mentioned she's trans about three times in the space of 20 episodes. There is a mixed race lead in Zendaya. The cast is incredibly diverse. Barbie Ferreira is a plus size actress. You know, and they're not having the conversation because we can see it. We can see these characters having very full lives. You know, I never talk about being trans, you know, ever really. So it's kind of, but the difference between Euphoria is that Euphoria and Emily in Paris are not making up for some quite problematic episodes in the 90s, but we've all moved on. I don't think And Just Like That needs to apologize for the sins of Sex and the City. You know, these characters are older now. They're bereaved. They're questioning their identities. It's fine.
And actually,
when they have told stories.
I haven't seen them for ages. They've caught up with the rest of society. They live in Manhattan as sophisticated women. They're just using that language they've cracked on. If they flagellated themselves, they did it a few years ago when we all did it. quite honestly.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So, can I ask, let's get to the juicy, shady as plotline. At the end of the last episode, there was a very big promise. Miranda was going off to, I think it was Cleveland.
Yes!
Surprise!
I'm so glad you said
shady
that.
Shady as. And so I was thinking, oh God, this isn't going to go well. And I actually don't mind, because you don't surprise someone who has made it clear they're polyamorous, I think. I don't know that you surprise anyone now. I think you might, even if you just text to go, what are you up to? Or you want the walk through the door to be a surprise, you make absolutely sure that that's okay. But there was no delivery on that promise. I don't mind if the writers twist it and Shay's delighted to see her. We're thinking, oh God, it's all going to go wrong. I don't care what they do, but please deliver on that promise. We just cut to them having a date in New York.
Yeah, but also it doesn't make any sense. You cut to them having a date. It starts with a classic example of saying and not showing, which is the opposite of, like, route one, what to do, which is I really, really, as soon as they said, she's so joyful about going to Cleveland, I was like, she's going to walk in on a, like, what's the word? In flagrante. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to see it. Like, you know that's what you're going to see. And actually, if that's not what you see and it's a swerve, you're going to fill it with joy. Or, like, it was really exciting to see her surprise them in Cleveland. And then you didn't get to see that. Instead, they're on a date talking again about promiscuity within polyamory, etc. And it's like, oh, you've done it. And then Miranda surprises them in such a tiny version of that way. And that's not okay. You're like, hang on, how can, I don't understand. Why is it really not on for Shay to get surprised with some cookies, but it is okay for her to get on a plane and surprise them
in
at their gig? What? It doesn't follow, does it?
Do you know what? I think this one got writers roomed, because I think the plot, and I've said lots of times on, so I got to thinking, I'll tell you what would have helped this whole series is a bit of Carrie Bradshaw voiceover.
Yeah.
To just tell us what it is we're meant to be taking away. And I think it's really lacked it. And sometimes it feels like we're drifting a bit between plots as well. But I think on this one, draft one of this script had Miranda initially freaking out about the fact that Che is polyamorous. And this is very new, and Miranda's trying to be cool with it, but she's actually not cool with it. But then I think somebody in the writer's room would say, no, we're shaming polyamorous people, and we need Miranda to be fine with it. Because then the plot kind of doesn't really make sense. Because then, is that what Miranda's doing with the cookie? Is she suspicious of Che? Is she trying to catch Che out? And that's when Che says, Miranda, I was just writing, then it would have been kind of, oh, and actually it turns out Che isn't sleeping with anyone else right now because they really do love Miranda. Then it would have made more sense. But because they didn't want to in any way appear to be critical of polyamory, it kind of meant the plot didn't really have a trajectory.
Mm. I think it's became a massive about kind mistake.
Of, yeah, Juno. Yeah.
Odd. I think I wanted to see a woman in her 50s that had only ever had monogamous relationships deal with it, not deal with it crassly. The story, I think this is where people, they misunderstand, and I see it happen online all the time. It's the difference between a character's actions and a story. Because the moral of the story can be Miranda figures out how polyamory works. But within that, she's allowed to have, oh, well, I've never done this before. I get a weird feeling when I know you're with somebody else. That's fine. That's what the ethical slot's about. It's about learning the book. It's about learning to deal with that. And there's whole chapters in that about you're going to feel jealous. This is what you do when you feel jealous. It's not shaming polyamorous people. It's learning to deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. They've got a bit of her dealing with it badly, as in she's clearly like not picking up Shay's calls and being like, oh, I think what we're doing is playing hard to get with each other. And it's so obvious that that's like a mismark. But even then you're like, they just left that hanging. I was like, this would be really interesting now if we were really making sure the stories all mattered in this.
Or to find out that Shay was...
Was Shay actually contacting Miranda with something really important here? Instead, you've just got this wishy-washy. And even Shay's, I can't give you a traditional relationship... It's not clear what that means. It's not clear whether Miranda's having to deal with someone who isn't into monogamy or just someone who's got a really promiscuous past, or it's not clear what Miranda's even having to learn to cope with the feelings of yet, other than it's not a man.
That's a good pitch, Jessica, though, that Shay was actually at the emergency room or something and wanted Miranda. Yeah. And she's like, no, I can't be too emotionally available.
Because we're not traditional.
Like getting it wrong. But I also, do you think it's a cop-out that Che isn't sleeping with anyone else? Like she said she's polyamorous.
A little bit. I wonder if that was meant to be the plot. Again, if we'd had Carrie, tying Miranda's storyline to Lily's storyline, saying, meanwhile, a different woman was acting like a teenage girl. I'm not going to answer the phone call, kind of. So that kind of might have made more sense. I'm still not sure where this is going. So, I mean, we've got one episode left.
Is it just one left?
It feels very easy, is my quibble with Miranda and Che. I mean, I love Che. I love Steve. I'm sure we can talk more about poor old Steve in a minute. Poor old Steve trademark. but I don't think they predicted that. I don't think the creators knew quite what was going to happen with sympathy for Steve. And it's not even coming from a place of sort of like homophobia or transphobia. It's just, will somebody please consider the feelings of her husband of 25 years?
Who we love.
That's a much more complicated process, a disentanglement from a relationship like that. And also, I say this as someone who left the father of my child after a 9-year relationship. Like, you do also have to compute, especially once they're a teenager, how the kid is. For now, it looks like just no one's just told that.
Brady has not even mentioned it.
Yeah. Brady just did a lot of fucking, and then he was being a nice ally at a rally, and that's all Brady's really.
I've forgotten you've almost lived this plot line. You had a male long-term partner, son with that partner, and you left that relationship and then came into a relationship with a woman who you're now engaged to. So presumably you've experienced a lot of these feelings and conversations. Do you identify with this plot?
Well, it's nice to see this plot, and I don't know if it's true, but my girlfriend told me that Cynthia Nixon insisted if she was going to be involved in this that she gets to have a queer storyline, which if that's true, I love, and all sorts of things like that. I mean, I think it's nice to see it's represented, but equally, no, I mean, and also, and I should also, I feel like saying like my experience doesn't mean I have had what is the universal experience of this happening. There's a million different ways you can leave a man and then sometime later end up with a woman. It's not.
I am asking you to speak for all women on this subject
please.
I feel like you're a monolithic group. How many are there of you?
Yeah. But I, just because the story's been so confusing, initially, really nice. I liked the kind of the slow in with it was kind of cute with all the blowbacks and stuff. I mean, that's fine. And then, I don't know, but even because stylistically, acting-wise, I think some of... Because it's so big, this, I don't know. I haven't even loved the sexy bits of it as much as I want to. I think Shay Diaz is a brilliant character. There's lots about it I love, and it's almost certainly the reason why I'm really into this series. I want to see where it goes, but I do feel like underfed. I can't believe how easy the conversation about getting divorced was. I mean, they made it a comedy conversation. They made it him going, "Oh, I was kidding," twice. There were no emotions displayed by anyone. I mean, in reality, surely there was for me, and surely for most people in that situation, a lot more tears are shed, even if your life's a sitcom, than in this situation. It's really, really been danced over, and I can 100% see why there's been a poor Steve trademark, poor Steve movement off the back of this. And I can't believe they've not mentioned the kids, like her son's... sort of how they just a nod to it, just something.
Brady being weird with her. There was an opportunity when she says, "I'll go with Brady," and he goes, "No, I'm going with my girlfriend." And she goes, "Oh, typical." Brady could have been like, "No, thanks. I want to go with Dad," or you know, like just attention, or "No, thanks. I'm going with my girlfriend," but like slightly like, you know. And then Miranda's like, "Oh, he's not happy." You know, it'll take him a while to get used to it. Just one moment of acknowledgement. So strange. It's like,
I tell you what, they could have taken some time away from Carrie's grieving, Debs, and given it to Miranda.
I think we needed four scenes with her standing over a ring box, honestly.
Yeah. Like, or maybe take 5 minutes from Lily's tampon and 5 minutes from Carrie's ring staring.
Oh. Or the entirety of Naya and Andre having the same conversation they've been having
again
9 weeks.
Again and again. That plot hasn't moved on at all.
No.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. It doesn't feel fair. So they've brought in two black women and given them very little to do, actually. And that doesn't help them in the long run because it just opens them up to accusations of tokenism. Mm-hmm. So the problem is, I think that they've almost slightly crashed between two stools there in having a desperate need for better representation for women of colour, but then actually getting them in and doing nothing with them, which is the worst, I think, way of doing it, kind of.
Two black women, one Hispanic non-binary person, one Asian woman, but actually we don't know anything really about any of their lives. What do we know about Shay Diaz other than they're a comedian outside Miranda? Nothing. We don't know about anything.
They're a stoner.
That is it. Highly sexed comedian stoner.
Yeah. Seema, we have at least seen her family and that there's a bit of cultural pressure to be in a relationship.
That's true.
Seema's my favourite of the new characters. And I think that is a huge credit to Sarita Chowdhury, who has that incredibly laid back performance. Like the others, like you said earlier, the others are really working for the gags. Whereas Chowdhury feels way more horizontal in the whole thing. And even though, you know, in some ways she's quite like the others in that she's single, she's 54, she's looking for love, she has slightly pushy parents. And actually she didn't arrive till episode 4 as well. So actually she's had 4 fewer episodes than LTW or Nia as well. And yet I feel like we know her better.
Do you think it's because she's been allowed to sit at the table? You know, the brunch table or the bar table a couple
maybe,
of times.
Maybe, yeah. She eats the food with them, yeah.
There's that fourth chair they keep auditioning. It's like Seema will get a scene, then Anthony will get a scene. You know, like they'll let somebody, sometimes no one's in that chair. It's just, you know, the ghost of Samantha. and they don't know what to do with that fourth chair. And I think they should have just committed to Seema that... I absolutely buy that kind of realtor. Again, same situation, single, that would be Carrie's new best friend. She doesn't have to be like Samantha. I think they should have just committed to that and let Seema have plot lines. That doesn't mean we can't see Charlotte working with somebody at school or more of Che Diaz's life or whatever, but it's too many. It's too many people, just too many people. They don't all have to have a shadow of colour so that... You know, as you say, they get a tiny pop, but nothing more. It's not fair. And as you say, it opens them up to accusations of tokenism, rightly. Can I ask you about the tampon question. How did you feel about this tampon storyline?
It's funny. Yeah, I think it's funny because last year, in the last 2 years, there's been a lot of nonfiction written about periods and menopause. And that, I think, was because it basically hadn't been talked about for 2020 years. Kind of, although we know Carrie and her friends referred to their periods usually around pregnancy. So in that very typical sitcom way, the way you know you're pregnant in a sitcom is because your period hasn't arrived. And so notably, Carrie got her period once in a children's play area. If we remember way back in series one, she thinks she's pregnant with Big. Later on, a couple of times, Samantha fends off the menopause. Once when she fucks her horrible neighbour with the grey ponytail and gets her period all over his sheets. And then... then she is more stringently fighting off menopause in Sex and the City 2, which does not exist and we shall not speak of. she uses sweet potato to try fend off the menopause. So I think it is absolutely correct and right that a show about 350-something women does discuss menopause and then also reflects back on it with Lily and her tampons. But again, did we need a whole episode on it? Or could it just be something that is referenced throughout as being a part of their lives? But I think it's so bizarrely taboo. It's mind blowing that seeing Charlotte get her period would be considered taboo. So I think it's hugely encouraging. A step in the right direction.
I liked it. I just felt it wasn't witty enough to go on for so long. It was the same beat over and over again. She can't put it in, then she can't get it out. She's behaving like a teenager. And there weren't enough good jokes for me to watch that for so long. I love that they covered it. I think more needs to happen. And I also just found it like horribly child-centric when the guests have come to the door, the dinner's being served, and then the teenager says, I need to know now. And I would only buy that if the party, the urgent party, I've decided I want to go, I can't miss out on this, please, can you help me put it in?
Yeah, the party needed to be now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If it's like, everyone else is going swimming without me, that's the point at which you'd be like, my guests are at the door, I cannot believe you're doing this to me. Okay, because you don't want your daughter to be crying, missing out with her fun with the friends, and you understand her reluctance. Just whimsically, I want to do it now. And the guests are at the door. No, honey. Guests are at the door. I'll tell you what, we'll do it when they've gone home or we'll do it tomorrow. Okay, well, you're a teenager and you are going to say that. Imagine leaving your guests waiting. It seems like half an hour to 45 minutes while you're watching YouTube tampon videos. I don't know. What did you think of this? Did you buy this?
I didn't buy it, but again, I think I liked so much that it was covered. Like, it sparked conversations about first ever tampon use with various people. Like, I think I like to see that. But you're right, you know, as with almost anything with this show, like, it wasn't dealt with.
Too much. It's just too much.
Too much. And again, like, that sort of white outfit with blood showing on it, that was done at like bad taste parties in the 90s and noughties. It's like, that's not a very new, I mean, I still great, love to see it, but it's not a new joke. I don't know. I thought that God, I'm sorry, this is so bad. And I don't know how anyone ever lets me on their podcast. I can't remember anyone's name. But when the guy brought his new boyfriend round, the fact that he was a Holocaust denier,
that was
that
hilarious.
How? That's the funniest joke in the whole series.
It was so good. When Anthony just screams, get out! I screamed. That was amazing.
And that was a nice bit of seeding before. It's like, oh, you've only just met him. Is he family friendly? And it's like, sure, he seems really clever and nice. And you're like, fine. And then that's the first thing he says. Is it a Jewish meal? And then he's a Holocaust. That's absolutely hilarious.
That's so funny that both of you loved that. And I now feel like such a curmudgeon that I didn't like it. But I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, gang. Because it was aired here on Holocaust Memorial Day, and it was just this one-off gag and didn't go anywhere. There was no... I was just like, what was that for? Like, why were you blurting that out? And because it was aired on... I don't know if it was aired in America on Holocaust Memorial Day or Eve, because we get it the same 24 hours, I think. I was just like, why? And like, there was no consequence.
I didn't know that it was Holocaust Memorial Day. I didn't like it. I was just like... I laughed at that. But equally, there's been so... I think what it does is like, what's the worst thing that man could say?
Maybe that was the writer's room thing.
And I think... From a comedian's point of view, I think, oh, good. Like a really good, there's a solid fucking joke there. You set up this man. We hope there's going to be something wrong with him because he's like, yeah, sure, he's family friendly. And then he just says the worst thing he could possibly say. No one in that show is apologising for that. It's like,
I do, you know, absolutely get that. I just feel, again, it wasn't hung on a story. If that had happened in the old Sex and the City, it would have been part of a story or a theme, like exactly what Gina's saying. Meanwhile, it's sort of like, you know, the most inappropriate party guest, yada, yada, yada. Or meanwhile, at a Jewish, you know, Seder downtown, you know, it would have felt like there'd be some thematic link. And to me, it just came out of absolutely nowhere. It was one pop. There was no consequence. It was never referenced again. And so I understand why you both found it funny. I do. I just felt like I need it to hang on to something.
I think if I'm honest, considering this is on paper a sitcom, there have been so few moments
jokes,
so few actual jokes like that. Again, has been another thing that's whistled in the wind for the sake of how, oh, I don't know, makey uppy for the olden days.
It is true. Anthony's the only one with funny lines, and he's always funny. And his response,
and they're always
which
a bit
so
more
immediate.
Near the knuckle.
Yeah,
he's a genius, that guy. Comedically, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think the fact, so he shut it down so fast that it was almost like, hear it and just like that, fuck off. Like, don't bring us your mental conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Just as Anthony Marantino screams, get out. I think that was, I think because there's a couple of others. I mean, he made a joke about plastic surgery and I don't want to look like Steven Tyler, dude looks like a lady or something. And so he's made a couple of jokes that have almost flirted with just bad taste, kind of.
Well, and he's going to, I feel like maybe they're not, but I feel like they're building up to giving him a little bollocking. Like his first take on Rock transitioning wasn't great. Like he seems to be giving us an example of someone who is struggling with the way the world's changed. He seems to be like number one on that. But even he, when it came to someone, wow, they've showed us where he's up to. Like that's where his band
is. Where he
are.
Is on the pyramid of terrible. Yeah, we can. Yeah. Where should we place the pin for Anthony?
Yeah.
He is the voice of the 90s on the show, isn't he? In the fact that he still feels free to make jokes. And sometimes he says things that they would have said to each other in the 90s. They would have made those remarks. In fact, I saw an old episode recently, because sometimes if I'm having a break, I watch an old episode just to see if there's any kind of links, because I'm obsessed with the foreshadowing. And I see brilliant things like Steve and Miranda are sitting there and this old couple are bickering about, I was there. No, you said you would be on the other side. And they're like bickering and they go, we don't want to end up like them. And ironically, in that farmer's market, they are exactly that couple. Yeah, you're over there. Yeah. I said to come over here. So I always see these beautiful like echoes and foreshadowings that may or may not be real. I know I could probably, it's like the Bible. You can see anything you want. But
I think you're right. I think that's deliberate. Now you've said it. I'm like, yes.
Because it's that's so specific I was waiting there and you're waiting here. So I think it probably was one. But I will also admit that I went to the ballet and someone came out in a tutu and I thought, I know where that's from. It's the opening titles. And I went, okay, you've gone too far now. I see it everywhere now because I'm always looking for the links. When Samantha says she's in a same-sex relationship with a woman, they react like, what? And they're walking down the street and Miranda's like, what? I'm a lesbian. Like, oh, I'm a lesbian. Well, then poof, I'm a fire hydrant. Literally what people say about trans people now. I'm like, oh my God. And Miranda says that about Samantha. And Carrie goes, poof, I'm a shoe. I've always wanted to be one and now I am. But then the conversation, that's not the point of the episode though. The point of the episode is Samantha going, sexuality is fluid. Why do I have to, you know, if I meet somebody who I'm attracted to and I have a feeling I could have a proper relationship with, why am I not allowed to explore that because of your limited ideas? So the point of the show was often progressive, even though they were mouthing the attitudes of the day. But it is interesting to see how that's moved on, that now Anthony's going.
Yeah. And that's, I think when, again, I would rather have Anthony being problematic and well done for the actor for taking that on the chin because people are so vile on social media. But the idea that Rock Goldenblatt could change their gender expression without anybody saying, oh, it's a phase, is unthinkable because someone would. I guarantee someone would. And actually, again, another character who desperately needs something more to do is Harry. And actually, when Harry came out of that conference with the very sort of right-on teachers who were being so frustratingly zen about the whole thing. Yeah, if I was Rock's parents, I would have been like, don't patronise me, you pair of twonks, kind of. And so I think I'm here for the light and dark, and I'm here for Anthony Marantina being a little bit politically incorrect. And I'm also here for the inevitable, because I'm sure it will get a season two, Anthony Marantino gets cancelled. Maybe that's where this storyline is going. And maybe somebody complains about the objectification of those poor bread delivery men.
Yes!
And like, once someone think about those men in their hot pants, you know, kind of, and maybe Anthony Marantino gets cancelled. Maybe that's where this is heading. And then we can do the inevitable cancel culture episode. Because you know it's coming.
I feel like the Twitter pushback on that would be, is under capitalism, we're all able to commodify our own bodies, including the hot guys. Sorry. But
that's the conversation, isn't it?
Intersectional feminism would say hot guys are allowed to deliver hot bread and nobody could stop them. So, you know, it's all a prism. Is there anything else that you spotted in this episode that you would like to discuss before we go?
I felt that DIY was represented as being a lot more fun than it is.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Very true. I would love to do it in silver sandals like that, though, and step into the paint when I'm asked an awkward question. Loved that.
Yeah.
Anything you felt, Juno?
I can think of nothing else, which is probably slightly sad, isn't it? She doesn't whip out an old piece of couture for no reason this week.
Sadly. I'm here for that. I'm only here for that. Get out those old outfits. Loved that last week.
I spotted another weird crossover. Seema's new potential love interest is Monsieur Renoir from Emily in Paris.
Oh!
Are we in the Darren Starverse? Is it all one thing? Is this the crossover event we've been waiting for? So he is the slightly sleazy man from season one who has now gone into business with beautiful Gabriel in Emily in Paris. So yeah, Monsieur Renoir has come to New York.
I am not an Emily in Paris person. I feel like that's not show is not for me. And just I am run. Very happy to leave it to the young
It's
people.
The crystal meth of television.
Is okay.
Just, I wish it never started. It's making my face go weird and my teeth are coming out. But I
just
tell you.
Just run.
I just cannot stop. I just can't stop. There is nothing I can think to recommend it. And yet, I can't stop watching it. I love it.
I'm going to be honest with you, Juno. This isn't really a podcast. It's an intervention. Jessica and I
have brought you here today.
Exactly. We need to talk to you
about
two
things.
Can you
help me with my yellow jackets problem?
No, I love that as well. I'm even more in love with the yellow jackets. So now I'm right there with you on that one.
We've come to talk to you about two things. One, the miniatures we found in your bag. The other... your Emily in Paris addiction.
Here's my empty hand sanitizer, which I drank. That's how you know someone's an alcoholic.
Can I borrow it? I need to pee.
Well, at least the coronavirus references have stopped. At least the COVID references died with Big.
They have not. When they were standing in the line for the club, when was the last time you stood in the line for the vaccine?
I missed that. At least we've stopped having to listen to that horrible podcast. If that's what podcasts are like in America, no thank you. At least we've stopped having to have little snapshots of that grim,
it didn't
grim
sound
podcast.
Like a podcast in any way, shape or form.
No, it sounded like the worst. It sounded like Mock the Week times a million. It sounded fucking
with
horrid.
Breakfast radio noises.
Yeah.
Just before we go, can I just talk about that queuing for the club scene? I just want to ask you this, because I watched that and I got to thinking, should I stop flirting and trying to charm doormen in those situations? Because I feel the message there is women over 35 can't
just
flirt.
Go for dinner. Just go for dinner.
Because when they went up to the front, I was expecting her to turn old Carrie Bradshaw on. You know how she would have been like, excuse me, sir. And a little bit of the charm and the sex and the flirt. She's like, I've got this because I used to do this. And he would have let them in. And I thought it was going to be,
Carrie gets them in and goes, still got it. And there's a little bit of her confidence, but they get in there and the music is so not their thing and they don't know how to dance to it. And it's just like awful. And they just turn out, walk out and go out or something like that. That was fun. And it was just like these all men now in this show are just deadpan her like she's not a sexual being anymore. Like the guy downstairs is just like, we don't eat sugar, and then calls her ma'am. And I'm like, she's so hot. What are you
Or if he let her
about?
In, but then Seema ruined it with her offer of cash. I liked the offer of cash not going down well.
The offer of cash, fine. But the flirt, the charm, even if he says, there's a whole line of people here, ladies, but like there's a sort of, let me see what I can, I don't know, something where at least the charm works. But she wasn't being charming to him. She was just going, I've seen this. She wasn't smiling. She wasn't turning on her flirt. And I feel like all of these women are being treated like they're, firstly, they're acting like they're 75. And secondly, I know 75-year-old women who could flirt their way past a doorman with the right... It's charm. It's not necessarily about, you know... But also, I'm just going to put it out there, and I've never said this before. I'm a feminist, but I happen to know that the most popular form of pornography in the world is MILF. I do not believe young doormen do not fancy women who are 55. I don't believe it. I don't fucking believe it. Those women, they're so put together. They're so... Their faces are so tight. I'm like, this is not the world. That guy would have fancied those women if it, do you know, I just.
Yeah.
She wouldn't need to because she's Carrie Bradshaw. She would be on the list. I wouldn't go to a club now where I wasn't on the guest list. Carrie Bradshaw knows enough gay men in Manhattan that she can be on any list to any club. Carrie Bradshaw can still get into trade without paying, I think, is the moral. And so that's what I must admit. I couldn't quite understand why. Why she hadn't just got herself on a list somewhere. So weird.
Do you know, I did not know that I could get myself on a list. Are you more successful and hot than me? Or could I also be on a list?
Do you know what? It's my proximity to the gay men who control the nightlife of London. Okay. But the problem is I now live in West Sussex, so it's an absolutely dead connection. And I could get into Sing the Pink for Nothing, but also I would have to get myself to Bethnal Green. So that's not going to... to tell you what, I might well be able to get on the guest list, but I cannot teleport, so...
Juno, could you put yourself on the list and could I turn up and say I'm Juno Dawson? Would that work?
Well, why not? Let's give it a go. I'm Rachel Greep. Yeah, it worked for that woman in Friends.
Hey! Well, listen, I feel like I'll offer you a bed in Camden if you get us on a list, because I pretty much know I can't get... I knew the answer to the question. I don't think I can get myself on a nightclub list. I'm going to need you. And then we're going to have that night that we should have seen them have. We never got to see them dance. The Old Sex and City, they were always dancing. Even they went into the club at the end and I just like that, I felt like dancing. I'm like, can I please see it? I need to see something happy and fun. I did not get to see
it. I didn't like nightclubs, but I'll join you for brunch the next morning and I won't have hot water with lemon.
Solids for breakfast.
Absolute solids I'll have.
Excellent. I am delighted by both of your excellent analyses for this episode and the show as a whole. It's been an absolute joy to have you. Juno Dawson, do you have anything to plug?
If you would like to pre-order my first novel for adults, which is called Her Majesty's Royal Coven, and it's basically Sex and the City, but with witches. there is a beautiful Waterstones special edition if you're a UK listener, and it will have sprayed edges and it's quite striking. And that comes out in July.
Amazing.
Thanks.
I'm excited. Come back on The Guilty Feminist and we'll do a witchy episode.
It's a very feminist novel, so that would be amazing, yeah.
I mean, I know it is because I know you. Jess Foster-Q, do you have anything to plug?
I have a podcast called Hoovering that's all about eating. Can listen to that if you want. I'm previewing a new show all over the place called Wench. Come see that.
Is it the sequel to Hench?
It's going to have nothing to... Not, oh, I don't know. It's hard. No, I mean, I'm going to do a trilogy that all rhyme with Hench because it would be weird.
What I'm asking is it the movie of Hench or is it the reboot? And just
it's
like
got nothing
Hench.
To do with Hench. It's got completely different themes.
Okay, much like Hench. And just like that. But I imagine.
It's a reboot. Yeah, it's like that.
It's a reboot. It's a Wench reboot.
Hench has sort of got quite sort of brainy in bits and this one's mainly about pubes.
Excellent. I hope there's some tampon action in it at least.
Well, not yet, but I'll write something.
Could there be 25 minutes on a wedding ring?
just the easiest show I've ever written. It just wrote itself.
Just a question. I'm looking forward to the final episode. Please text me all and any thoughts. There is a sort of occupational hazard with this, which everybody who's guested on this show, I now have to text about every episode. So it takes up a lot of my week. Thank you so much for coming on. You've both been amazing. Big round of applause for Juno Dawson and Jessica Foster-Q.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist Watchers, and Just Like That with me, Deborah Frances White, and my very special guests, Juno Dawson and Jessica Foster-Q. The producer for The Spontaneity Shop was Tom Selinsky. The Guilty Feminist is part of the Acast Creator Network, and Just Like That is on HBO Max in the United States and Sky Comedy, and now in the UK. Join us next time for the season finale, Seeing the Light.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.